My name is Scott Bilski, and I'm the moderator for this panel. And I think that, well, first of all, thanks everyone for coming. We have the triple whammy of it being right after the largest party night in South by Southwest, and it being the earliest panel in the morning, actually 1 hour earlier, and the fact that it's raining. So all of you are awesome.
I think it's so adorable that Scott thinks that that was the biggest party night of South by Southwest. There are two more to go.
It's all relative. And it also was pointed out to me that actually at this moment, most of South by Southwest is actually unplugged. So that's great too. Thank you.
I would tweet that if I could.
We have a lot of people on this panel who are probably suffering right now from the fact that their devices are off and that they are disconnected, and I think this is going to be fascinating. I think that it's an interesting time for this panel because we are sort of in this era where forced disconnection is pretty much extinct. Anytime you're walking between buildings or between meetings, you know, it's a time to connect and figure out what's going on. I would probably say the final frontier of forced disconnection, the only time where we actually have to disconnect, is probably the shower. And now they have like shower media centers and stuff like that. So we're actually now at a time where we can always be connected. And that sort of forces the question of, should we be forcing ourselves to disconnect or shouldn't we? And now that we're at the mecca of constant connection, I think there's no better place to talk about the notion of unplugging. So I figured I would just start posing some things to the panel and get people's thoughts. I think I would like to start with something that is kind of, you know, interesting to me, which is the fact that a lot of us say we need to disconnect in order to be present with those that we care about. But at the same time, we're using real-time tools like Twitter and Foursquare in order to better understand and connect to the present. And so the question is, you know, understanding like what's happening right now. And so the real question is, to feel truly present, should we connect or disconnect? And maybe we'll start with Courtney, and maybe each person, before they say their first few words, can introduce themselves quickly. Courtney?
I'm Courtney Holt, and I'm in Los Angeles, and I work at a media company and in the digital media space, a name maker, and I am often connected too much. I don't mean that as a liability, but I would say that the idea of forced disconnection and how to wrestle with all this media is something we struggle with, I personally struggle with. I'm finding myself in more and more meetings where I'm looking at the phone and wanting to pick it up and look at what else might be going on. And then, so I think that idea that you're talking about where you have access to more information, it goes into that time and place. When is it appropriate and when is it not? What message are you sending to the people that you're meeting with if you're constantly looking at your phone while you're supposed to be talking? You know, you look for those pauses, and I think I've had these situations where if somebody has to go to the bathroom, we'll grab our phones and we start like, all right, let's get as much information in as possible right now. I don't know if it's efficient, but it's becoming endemic behavior, at least in my professional life.
My name is Rachel Sklar. I'm the founder of something called Change Ratio, and I'm going to be drinking this during the panel. So I am the person on this panel who is pro-tech, pro-being plugged in, but just because I often am, and because despite the fact that I was trained as a lawyer and then left law to be a writer and feel like I have a lot of marketable skills, the skill for which I am by far the most in demand and can command the highest fee at this point in my life is social media. So I get more sort of commentary on my tweets than I do on anything else I do in life. So in that respect, I am actually like pretty grateful for being on the right side of this new technological wave. But there's no question that we're at some sort of tipping point of efficiency where the freedom that comes from being able to knock off a few emails as you're walking from place A to place B has been replaced by walking slower from place A to place B, or feeling like it's like less of a big deal to be late to something, or just the inefficiency of not having 100% of focus on something from your whole team at any one time is people are like surreptitiously looking at their phone. And by the way, this is office, it's just a prop. Surreptitiously looking at your phone. So I definitely can see that. But the other thing that I just always want to bring up with the notion of unplugging is that a lot of people use, you know, talk about unplugging as, you know, like you got to unplug, spend time with your family, it's the weekend, take your kids out, you know, go outside, leave your phone, leave your work behind. Well, for those of us that don't have kids, for those of us who work like maniacs during the week, the weekend, having that space to like just engage with the stuff you want to engage in online is actually like such a pressure release valve and such a pleasure, at least for me. So I think that that's you know, that's something to be raised. So I'm pro tech and anti being a douchebag.
Thank you, Rachel. Dan?
My name is Dan Rollman and I'm a douchebag. my name's Dan. I run a company called Record Setter World Records, and also am a creator of a project that we'll talk more about called the Sabbath Manifesto, which is sort of a guide to how to carving out a weekly day of rest in our modern lives. The question of, you know, being present, I feel like you can be present in the digital space. You know, I can get lost in an instant message conversation. I'm not a gamer, but I'm sure gamers would talk about, you know, being able to be in the moment while they're involved in some kind of a digital experience. But, you know, if it's an A or B situation, I feel like nothing is ever going to, no matter how magical the internet becomes and no matter how powerful these tools, you know, get to, nothing is ever going to replace the joy that comes with being in the moment. And, you know, I just feel on a societal level, it is getting increasingly sad, quite frankly, from my perspective, that we are finding it more and more difficult to just sit and be present with people. You know, being here at South by Southwest, we see it more than ever. You know, I call it chasing the dragon. Like, we're just always trying to use technology to find out where the next best thing is. And, you know, the richest experience that I've had at the festival so far was going out to dinner with some friends last night, and we made, I don't know if you guys have heard about these things, they call it a cell phone stack. So basically, everybody at the table, we all put our phones in one pile in the middle, face down, and there was an agreement that we all signed up for in advance that if anybody touched the stack, then they had to pick up the tab. So we kind of stared at our phones, and there were certainly moments where somebody's story began with, like, let me show you this Instagram. Let me, you know, I want to see where my friends are checking in on Foursquare. But, you know, 90 minutes later, like, we just got lost in conversation, and I think we really... you know, we were able to just put aside that feeling of wondering where the next awesome thing was and where the cool party was and just be. And yes, I'm serious. I'm a douchebag.
All right.
My name is Ari Wallach. I run a strategy innovation firm in New York City. And we help very large organizations innovate. And so what ends up happening when we have our first couple of meetings with the CEOs is that they really want us to talk about social media and collaboration and online and digital and how we're going to get their people talking more to one another and sharing more and being connected more in a digital way. And what we found both through our own research and just through being is that some of the greatest ideas and kind of true innovation comes when you're actually doing none of that. So it's always sometimes counterintuitive that we, you know, speaking about fees, Rachel, that we get fees that basically that allow us to tell very important people who run very large organizations to actually go offline and have real present conversations. And it's interesting, Scott, in your question you said, you know, your premise was around to be, you know, being connected or not. And the default when someone says that today is obviously when they say connected, you're assuming that means like digitally connected or connected in like cyberspace. Whereas, you know, a few years ago, connected meant just the opposite. It meant like being disconnected from everything out there and being like connected here in the present. And I was fortunate enough when I left college to spend some time and live at basically like a Zen monastery just north of San Francisco. One of the guys who was on his kind of training to become a true monk was one of the founders of Netscape. It's interesting because he always wore this hat, this little like Netscape navigator hat, which is just really odd, you know, going to like 4 a.m. meditations and seeing this Netscape navigator hat. And so I asked him, you know, I said, you know, you're the only brand in this entire place is your Netscape navigator hat. And he said it's his reminder. You know, it was like his like interesting like totem was like what everything that he was trying to remove from, he always wore. And I found out a few years later he stopped wearing that hat when he no longer needed it.
Thank you. There's an argument that the circumstantial stuff that happens in our lives is extremely valuable, and that when we're constantly connected, we start to lose those things. And I mean, I know that I met my wife actually through a family friend of mine and her mother being in a nail salon waiting for their nails to dry. And since they had no iPhones or anything to look at, they started chatting with each other and decided to fix us up. And so sometimes I wonder, you know, that if they were both like tuning in while their nails were drying, you know, then I may never have met her. Which is to say, are we like losing something, you know, in terms of real connection and life-changing stuff by being connected? And I guess from a cost-benefit standpoint, do you guys think that we are discovering and stumbling upon things in a profound way more through technology, or are we net losing through technology? I mean, maybe quick thoughts on this.
First of all, I'm so glad that you just gave me an awesome excuse for my parents as to why I'm not married, so thank you. So serendipity. You can't control it. You can't predict it, and there's nothing that you can, you know, if but for this, then that, if not for this, then that. There's no question that discovery happens in different and more measurable ways because of being connected and because we're transferring our attention and our that incidental activity online. I don't believe that means we are, you know, that it's not possible in the real world. Obviously, I have plenty of those experiences. And for the record, any of the dudes that I've dated as a result of sort of the initial online connection, I have regretted. So there's that. IRL, it's important in many ways. In real life, IRL stands for in real life. But in terms of learning and sort of professional opportunities and just, you know, participating in the conversation, like, I love the internet and I love the online conversation. One of the ways in which I truly feel like my life has actually been enriched is having Twitter by me while I'm watching, like, a big TV moment. The Oscars, the VMAs, like, the presidential debates. It's always been enjoyable. I always liked the Oscar parties or the chatter that goes on, but it is so much more fun. I love having this, like, meta channel of connection, and it's a meta outlet for me for, like, my little commentary and the engagement that comes from it. I also think that it's a great opportunity to engage more seriously on things you care about. A really good example is during the Grammys, I sort of like spontaneously became part of a movement to ostentatiously and measurably, you know, tweet about changing the channel anytime Chris Brown came on. And that's, you know, that was something that was, you know, that I tweeted about, and the response from my feed was overwhelming. And it was able to be part of a larger story the next day about the fact that people were reacting against Chris Brown being on stage at the Grammys, which I think is like an important thing. So again, I'm the Pollyanna on the panel about this stuff.
Any other comments on that before I ask a quick question to the audience? Real quick question. So, you know, if you don't get a text back from a friend, you know, after 12 to 24 hours, you start to wonder what's wrong. And I think that we live in this age of, like, expected constant connectivity. And so I guess the question is, who has the upper hand, you or your device? So first of all, who thinks that they have the upper hand? All right. And then who thinks that their device has the upper hand? Roughly half-half. I mean, first of all, do any of you consciously struggle and wrestle with this, you know, who has control and any thoughts on that, Courtney?
Yeah, I've noticed this, and I tried something recently which is working really well, which was the need to respond. And also when you feel like sometimes there's the thing, and I had a rule in my last company where no one could send it, no one could have more than one person on the to line of an email. Because if you put more than one person on the to line, no one knows who should respond. And then if you're on CC, you're not supposed to respond. And that those are the rules, and they don't always work, but as long as you can articulate those rules, then you have to decide, I'm sending this email to tell a bunch of people stuff. Or if you don't want a response, put an FYI, so it's informational. But then you realize what ends up happening is that there's sort of this jump ball. Someone's going to send an email out, you're one of many people on it, and it's the first person to respond typically sets the tone for the conversation. And I realized that as I was doing this, and, you know, a lot of times I'm on email 9 to midnight. It's my quiet time because I have kids. My kids are asleep. I'm on. That's when I go back on email. I'd say I'm going back to work after I can have that quiet time. And I realized that as I was sending out more and more emails, people were expecting to respond. They're like, oh, my God, I have to respond. And you're forcing the day later and later and later. So I started just putting them in draft and say I'll send them tomorrow. Unless it was required or was a time zone issue, somebody internationally where it didn't matter. But like if there's somebody who I thought might be up and they would expect to have to respond, just wait till the morning because they're not going to, it's not going to change anything dramatically between 11 p.m. and setting a date in the morning. So then I wake up and I just say, I'll hit send to all these cached emails and they'll just go. And it changed, it stopped creating this sort of frenetic, I have to respond and maybe it's not the right response. That was just one way I didn't turn it off, but I tweaked it a little bit just to change the nature of how things were working, and it worked really, really well. But I do recommend that rule on the two in CC just to stop the madness, because it is madness. Mm-hmm.
I think in terms of the power thing, I do work hard to unplug, but I do find it extraordinarily difficult. A few years ago, I did a month backpacking in South America, and I decided in advance that I was going to unplug for the month and, you know, backpack and not go into internet cafes. And it worked for 2 weeks, and then I just reached this point of feeling like so disconnected that I arrived in Quito, Ecuador, and I went into a internet cafe and I binged. I mean, I went in for 5 hours. I spent 5 hours and I was just typing in URLs. You know, of course you start with your email and you're going through it. And then it was just like, I craved it. And it really, you know, brought to the forefront this realization that I have this is the most powerful addiction that I've ever dealt with in my entire life. And I think it is happening on a societal level. You know, I read, I forget where I read this, but somebody made the analogy or asked whether what our relationship with technology is the relationship that society had with tobacco in the 60s, when people did not realize the long-term impacts that it was having. You know, we're really the first generation that's going through this, and, you know, I guess there is a younger generation that's coming up that's going to even have it in a greater role in their life. I do feel, at least in our plugged-in community, especially, you know, us who work in the digital fields, I do feel, at least on a personal level, that it's an addiction, and I wonder if it is, a societal danger that we need to step back and mm-hmm. look at.
I mean, I know this is going to sound totally cliche. I have kids. I have 3-year-old twin daughters. And when I come home from work, when they're about 2.5, a lot of times I wear like a dress shirt or a suit because of my stuffy corporate clients. And I'll come home like 5:36, and they'll say, no shirt, which means take off my work shirt and like put on a T-shirt, which I always thought was like really, you know, cute. And then in the past like 3 or 4 months, they've been, you know, no shirt, no phone. Because what was happening was I was like taking out my phone and kind of like checking it while I was like talking to them. And that's like really messed up. At least I think it's messed up. Like, I don't know if we're going to have more kids. This may be my only shot with 3-year-olds ever. And like, this is how I'm kind of experiencing them through this. And so they say, no, you know, no shirt, no phone. And then something happened 2 weeks ago that really freaked me out, which was, they didn't say no phone, but when I put the phone down, because they've now like learned how to open apps, my daughter Ruby actually took the phone and opened it up and started looking at photos. And so, like, it was no longer about me, like, not connecting with them. It was, like, they were actually, like, now disconnecting from dad coming home and, like, looking at photos. And so, like, when you walk into our apartment, we had this little kind of tray where you put your keys now. I just built a little shelf now to put my phone there, at least for the few hours while they're awake. So it's kind of like just leaving it there. And then obviously when they go to sleep, I immediately like jump back in because I'm addicted. Yeah. But at least having that like momentary disconnect. And it's like they're so young. Like they see everything. And they saw that. Like what dad, how dad disconnects is having this like shirt on that's a work shirt and this thing called a phone. And I think it's, you know, the device definitely has the upper hand when your kids are calling you out and they're only 3 years old.
Yes. Well, I mean, you bring up this, you know, this notion of rules that we set for ourselves, or rituals of putting it, you know, in the shelf, or and I guess the question I would have is, you know, I was talking to a chief marketing officer of like a Fortune 50 company who was saying that, you know, she's constantly reacting to stuff, and she could literally react to stuff that comes in at all times and never be proactive in thinking about her business at all if she just simply tried to stay afloat in her inbox. And she was saying how when she really needs to strategically plan for her business, she takes a trip to China. And it's like the forest's connection in the plane that just like is her zone to like kind of plan, and that it actually requires a trip to China to do it. And so the question is, should we... And you know, I had this controversial idea that turned into a blog post recently where I said that planes should not have Wi-Fi, just to kind of have one element in society that forces us to disconnect sometimes.
Why do we need to be forced?
Well, so let's talk about it.
I don't want this.
Do we need rules? Do we need to force ourselves, or are we strong enough to like, you know, to really like, you know, preserve it even if the option's there?
But here's the thing. I don't want this woman's inability to manage her life so much so that she needs to book a plane trip to China to like have space. I don't want that to impact my ability to knock off a few emails on a plane, which I love. I actually really enjoy having that time on a plane. I love it. I love go in flight. I never fail to like be thrilled by the fact that I get to send emails from the sky. Look, I'm tweeting from the sky. That makes me happy. And I actually tweeted on my flight. Now I can't remember which flight. I think it was my flight.
Because you were too busy being connected. You forgot.
No, I mean, no, you're like, that's, if you want to see that of me, you can see that of me. But actually, I tweeted from a plane on my way, I think, from New York to wherever we are, Austin. And
she's too busy being connected.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, I've been on planes so much for the past. I went from New York to L.A., L.A. to Hawaii, Hawaii back to L.A., LA to Palm Springs to New York. And in that time, I went to a super highly emotional wedding that involved like bereavement across the family. And I went to TED Active, and then I hung out with my family, and then I came home. Like there was all sorts of stuff going on, and there were so many reasons to sort of, there were so many things present. And plus, I had tons of work to do that I couldn't do because I had all this other stuff going on. And my moments of solitude on the plane were really rejuvenating for me. And I don't know if anybody knows who Susan Cain is. She gave a TED Talk about, she's recently bubbled up for her work on introversion. She wrote this book called Quiet about sort of how introverts need to have solitude to recharge. And no one on the planet who knows me would ever call me an introvert. But I have what I now call my Susan Cain moments, where I just want to like be in my little space and like do my thing and be alone. And I actually, last night at the Driscoll, I escaped that IRL crush and I fled to the bathroom for like half an hour with my iPad, and I just returned emails, and like I stood there and like against the mirror, and I like returned emails, and I was chatting, and it was so great. So that was like the reverse for me. It was like the crush of the Driscoll and the like forced chatter of everybody around me versus like the quiet silo of like, ah, it's just me and my iPad doing my thing. So I mean, I think that grown-ups, just to get back to what you were saying about your friend going to China, like, people who are not addicted and are aware of what they're doing are, you know,
are able to recognize when they need relief from the chatter, whether it's online or offline. And you said I'm addicted, but you're not addicted because you're able to come home and put your phone on a shelf. The people who we have to worry about are the people who can't put that phone on the shelf. But I just don't want those people ruining it for the rest of us.
So any other thoughts on rules? Do we need them or do we not?
I live in New York City, and there's a lot of rumblings that they're soon going to have Wi-Fi available in the subways. And I have my days where I wonder whether I should get out and get involved as a citizen who would not like to see that happen and get involved. I mean, I think that we're all on on various levels starting to feel and wonder, is this all good? Or maybe I'm alone in this, but I feel I've talked to enough people that ask these same kind of questions, like, is this healthy that we're in this crazy space of going to the bathroom for 30 minutes to send emails on an iPad? I think of unplugging as kind of what the next punk rock is going to be. So I think that there's going to be some kind of a movement that comes out from underneath, and it's TBD what that thing is going to look like, but it's just going to be enough people who say, I don't want to feel this responsibility to be plugged in all the time. Like, I don't want to download this new app that, I know everybody's buzzing about. Like, I downloaded Highlights. I wanted to check it out. And I was at Dulles Airport yesterday, and the information it gave me was that there was one other guy at Dulles Airport who also likes Radiohead. And I was just...
Wait, what's funny about that, so on my flight that I was actually on with Scott, I had 8 people on Highlight that I was connected to just on my flight, because we were kind of like, there was a broken computer on our flight, so we had to sit there on the tarmac for a while. And like 6 of them, my only connection was also Radiohead. So I think that says something about like the Highlight demo.
Yeah, but yeah, I just it's just like enough is enough. Like, I'm not interested. Like, that's not a society, like a future society that I'm that thrilled about. I would rather be thinking about how we can pour things in a direction where we're again able to find time to be with the close people that we love in our lives. And I do on an individual level, because I see my patterns be changing, but I also feel on a larger level like there are warning signs that keep me up at night.
I mean, to your point, Scott, I mean, a lot of this is about moderation, right? I think so. It's not black and white. It's not binary. It's knowing when to say when, right? It's like responsible drinking. It's like responsible connecting, going in both ways. And I think the issue is, especially the people on this panel, like Rachel, I think can self-moderate because she's aware. But what I'm seeing is like a lot of, like the general zeitgeist right now of society is not to moderate, is to like full on, especially if you look at like South by Southwest, and just like it's go, 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 like always be on and always be connected. And there isn't that like punk rock yet. I think it's happening, and it's not neo-Luddite though. It's not anti-technology. I think it's just like being able to moderate. And I don't. But and so to your point though, I don't know what the role of rules are in that. Like, I have friends who are Chabad, which are like very religious Jews who like live in a world of very strict rules, and that's not a world that I necessarily would want to be in. But like, I also see like the pros of that. Like, they know when it's like it's a settled thing. And as a society, I think we have to figure out what our moderating rules are, as opposed to these kind of like black and white dogmatic rules.
But that's true of, think about things like health, fitness, food. I mean, there are guidelines in our lives now that weren't there 10 or 20 years ago, partially due to the quality of food that we're eating. Now it's a conscious effort to be healthier, to eat organic foods, to eat, you're even looking at how fast food chains are reacting, getting rid of trans fat. These are all sort of reactions to, let's make things as big as possible. And, remember, there was a daily, I remember I'll be old enough when gyms weren't cool. Now gyms are real cool. It's just cool to go to a gym, and there's like techno music and wacky classes, and those are things that
Radiohead didn't
exist. And Radiohead and gyms. Right. But that was a reaction to sort of the passive lifestyle that we went through in the 80s and even the early 90s, things started to shift. We don't know we knew what the impact was on the food we were eating now, because you're seeing it in the health issues that we're having, in our society. But we don't know what these are going to be. So in a weird way, as much as I actually think that creating those guidelines have to be personal, we do need to start to think about them, because if not, they're going to happen anyway. There will be a reaction to the need to be connected in the same way that there was you could eat anything you want. It was like these things changed because the food quality's changed. I think our lifestyle quality is going to be forced to change whether we decide to do it or not. And those will be the guidelines or rules that we end up putting on top of it.
So I think that what's actually interesting, you mentioned gyms, and it reminds me of a point I wanted to raise earlier, which was I think a lot of this is driven too by the fact that everything is now on one device. So it used to be, that you couldn't have a camera in a locker room, right? But we all have cameras in our locker room now because we have our phones. We're checking our phones if we get off. And by the way, I assume that's how it works in locker rooms, because I haven't been to the gym in much longer than it should be. Our cameras. So if you're going to take pictures of your kids and your camera's on a shelf, like maybe you'll miss an opportunity to take pictures of your kids. And I've always been the person who had my camera was taking pictures of everything. And interestingly, you reminded me of something that when I was in law school, I was the editor of the yearbook and taking photos and videos and stuff. And I remember my my boyfriend at the time would chide me for stepping away from my friends to, take pictures and be on the outside looking in so I could capture the moment rather than be in the moment. And that was before I had a phone. And I felt very comfortable being in the moment, but I loved the moment so much, I wanted to capture it. And so, I'm definitely that kind of person, a sharer, like a keeper. And one of the reasons that I, by the way, did not download Highlight, you guys going to learn from me, is because it's more important to me to have photos on my phone than apps, and I'm at a room.
And you don't like Radiohead.
No, I was thinking about that encounter. Sounded a lot like it could eventually become a Radiohead song, like the drones in the airports, computers. Greg, can't you hear that being a Radiohead song? So I just think it's interesting. If you have your camera with you and your camera also was giving you push notifications, then it's going to be hard to disconnect from being in touch, online versus just taking pictures. And I actually thought about that when you talked about your stack of phones during dinner. It's like who took a fun picture? So I would have the DTs, not necessarily because I'd want to return random email, but because I'd see Dan with a barbecue sauce smeared all over his face, and I'd be like, oh my God, Facebook photo, click. Mm-hmm. So, or a great photo to just keep to yourself.
I think that, the last question I would just ask on the fears or risks side, before I think we should talk a little bit about solutions, possibly, is another TED talk that happened at TED this year, which was about a woman talking about how we may be losing our ability to be alone. Because when we're always next to our device, at any lonely moment, you can essentially connect to everything and everyone. And her concern was maybe we're losing the ability to kind of be alone at all. Hmm. Is that a concern, or are there any other kind of, somewhat existential concerns that you think we should bring up on this unplugged panel before we talk about solutions? And I'll maybe start at that side, or you guys?
Yeah, I don't know how many people have ever experienced phantom buzzing in your legs, where you reach for your leg because you're sure your phone is buzzing, but it's not. I get that every once in a while, and I don't think I obviously had that before the phone, and I feel like that's a new syndrome. Hmm. And tends to happen if it's been 15 minutes since I've checked my phone. That is an issue. I think we're actually rewiring parts of our software to want to be connecting in a way that keeps us from being existentially alone. What's happening out there? I think it's interesting because on the one hand, technology is making us more and more exogenous, much more connected out there. But at the same time, and I know this because I'm giving a talk on this on Tuesday, we're seeing a huge rise in kind of less and less people actually saying they're religious, but more and more people saying they're spiritual, which is really kind of an endogenous movement towards connecting with yourself on the inside. And so we're seeing these two kind of co-rising phenomena between being through device connected exogenously to the world, but at the same time in our inner self wanting to endogenously connect. And I don't know how that becomes reconciled, but I think we're getting towards this, like, how do I stay both alone and connected and together and connected?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is harder to find solitude in the digital age. And because if we're alone, then I think it's a natural tendency to, as soon as we want some sense of connection, to, you know, go to our devices and find our online communities. On the other hand, that's, I think, has a lot of upside, right? That there is always a community available. A couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine put out a theory that I've been thinking about, which is really interesting. Is he asked the question of whether the Columbine tragedies will decrease in the digital era because these people who can't find a community now have that community. So, like, if you're a weirdo punk rocker in small town America and just don't have anybody in your real lives that you can connect with, like, you'll find your community on the internet regardless of what you're into. So, I think this is it's an interesting question and one that I see both sides with.
Yeah. Rachel?
Well, I don't know about sort of averting. I think there's deeper reasons for things like kids going crazy and going on shooting sprees and schools like this.
It's a lack of connectedness.
I mean, I'm not sure the Unabomber wanted to be connected. So, I mean, that's the sort of thing that you can, like, pose that question in theory, and it doesn't, like, you pose, like, there's so much more. I would want to see so much more nuanced information and actual studies and actual experts weighing in on that. But I can say offhand that your point to people who would feel isolated in real life finding communities online, like, I think that's a really important pressure valve. And I think one community where that has been seen has been the mom community, in terms of, you know, talking about things that might feel taboo or that you know, you are not polite to speak about, like, just sort of like or even sharing just the overwhelmingness of it, or just the way it feels when your hormones are racing through your body. Again, this is not something that I'm speaking about from experience, but it's sort of like empathy and awareness and speaking to friends. And I think that that's a really good example of the internet being, like, such an important organizing tool for information sharing. And just what I do with Change the Ratio, which is an organization meant to elevate amazing women and increase visibility, opportunity, and access for them in a world where I think we can all agree the pathways from A to B for dudes tend to be smoother and easier with more mentorship, and possibly for women, maybe a few more obstacles. We're not going to discuss this right now. But in terms of getting messages out, you know, organizing, making people feel empowered. And I think, you know, a really good example of that, it's not quite on point with what I do necessarily, but sort of is what we've recently seen with, Sharon Fluke, I can't remember her first name.
Sarah
Fluke, and the contraception issue, or, like, the Komen Planned Parenthood thing. You know, like, there are groups that maybe are not as, powerful or have as much schlep in the real world that are organizing and finding their power online. So, I mean, I tend to think that that's a very valuable thing.
Mm-hmm. Courtney, anything to add?
I think that the idea of finding your own space, both connected or not, I actually find, I'm going to agree with Rachel on one thing that I do, is when I am able to just kind of be with my friends, I'm maintaining these relationships with people I don't typically see. I recently had a unique experience where I landed in London. I hadn't made plans with, I just was like, landed in London, I'm just going to take a walk, and I fired up Path, which is another app, and I have a very limited number of friends, like 25 friends, and it turns out one of my friends was not only in London, but most importantly, he'd found a really good coffee place. Which, by the way, there aren't any here for some reason, I can't figure that out, but doesn't seem to be one here, but in London, he was like, oh, you gotta, and I immediately connected. I'm like, are you in London? He goes, yeah, come to this place. Turns out he was at this hotel that I was staying at, and the coffee place was two blocks away. And the fact that I could land in a place with no clear motive and plan, connect with a friend I hadn't seen in probably a year, still a good friend, but not somebody I talked to on a regular basis, and have that, let's go hang out and have a coffee. All of that was really cool and something that technology enabled, but the technology enabled me to have an experience that was personal. We just went and talked. But it was cool that it led me to something that I wouldn't have otherwise had. So those connections that I can maintain in different aspects of my life are really important. But I don't look to the technology to create and maintain the connections. I look to me to do it. It's an enabler of those experiences, but it also is great when they flip into real-world situations.
Well, I mean, listen, it's clear that we all love technology. We all benefit from technology, and we're all trying to reconcile for ourselves individually something that I think our entire, you know, generations of people that are in this room are all going to have to figure out over time, and it's only going to get more challenging. I mean, we all agree, I think, that there are challenges here. I think now I'd like to kind of shift the conversation to two questions. How do we audit our own health with technology? I mean, how do we make sure that we are, in fact, aware of the reality that we're living versus succumb to a potential addiction? And, you know, no one said that it is or it isn't yet, but there are studies that a lot of us are probably aware of the dopamine hits that we get when we tune into Twitter and whatever it is. So assuming that there could potentially be something addictive about being connected, how do we audit ourselves? And then the second question would be, you know, how do we preserve, you know, the disconnection to whatever extent we like it in our lives? So maybe just any best practices or thoughts on that we can just share as a panel.
Yeah, I was going to say, I woke up this morning, I turned on the TV, and on CBS Sunday Morning Show, there was a study on sleep. And it was talking about how we as a society aren't getting enough sleep. And they were laying out what the rules are. The healthful rules for sleep is, I think, 8 to 9 hours is what we're supposed to get as, I think it was like anybody over the age of whatever, it's like 20 something. And what they said was, but we're all able to get by. And a third of us are wired for very little sleep and the rest of us require it. And then they said, if you want to figure out how much sleep your body needs, go on vacation and by the third day track, go to bed when it naturally feels like you should go to bed and wake up without an alarm and see what happens, how many hours, and track it over a couple of days. And that should give you the guidelines for rest. Hmm. And I was trying to think, I'm like, wow, I don't know when I'll ever get to figure that out. Like, independent of vacation, like when you even just like have that, I'm just going to naturally go to bed when it's like, it sounds very like I'm an Eskimo living in the middle of nowhere and I'm just going to go to bed when the sun is, or a farmer who's like, it's just like, these are things like, how do you ever get those ground rules figured out that I would know what my body needs, not what I'm able to get by on? And so I think that what's interesting about looking at the solutions is, what do we need and what can we get by on? And this is very subjective because everybody's sleep would be different and everyone's requirements here would be different. But I will say, and the one thing with Dan's concept of the National Day of Unplugging that we all, you know, participated in last year, it was very hard for me. It felt unnatural for me to do that for an entire day. But I will say that evening was not. So I felt like, wow, I can probably get by with maybe, you know, I'll start with once a year, put my phone away on Friday for, you know, from the time I get home till the time I wake up in the morning. Can I do that? And again, I'm not saying I forced myself to have to do it. I wanted to see what it felt like. It felt unnatural, but it was something I was able to do. The next day, I could not get by. I couldn't wake up and be like, I wonder what broke last night. I have to look and see what broke or what happened or what the news is. But I think that there are personal rules we can set around different forms of unplugging, actively doing it, just no different than I'm going to go to the gym today for an hour, or I'm going to not eat that thing. It's like, these are things you say, I'm going to turn this off for this amount of time and see how it feels. But I think it's on us to at least try and figure out where the points of acceptance are going to be personally, and then play with that. Because if we don't, I do think we're just going to kind of continue to spiral, and we never get the opportunity to see what it's like the other way.
Mm-hmm. This is very interesting for me, this panel, I have to say, because when we started, I think most of the people, we all know each other, and I think everybody would have probably said, like, I was the person by far who was the most addicted to her technology. But as we discuss all this stuff, like, I'm realizing that I actually use my phone and my tech in a pretty healthy way, because I...
You were only in the bathroom for 30 minutes.
Yeah. But Dan, I think framing is very important. You framed it as... I had to go to the bathroom because I, you know, I needed to be on my iPad and do things on the iPad. That was not the need. I needed to escape the crush of people at the Driscoll and find my own space to do my own thing. And that was the need that I was sort of responding to. You know, I have absolutely no problem, as you all know, like, I have no problem, like, hanging with people, dealing with people. But I think it's important to recognize that one can do that and interact online. So if I am, like, I'm a connected and communicative person, I do a lot of that in solitude. And so I don't ever need to find time to be alone. I live in New York City in a studio apartment. I am single. Like, I am an independent contractor. I don't, you know, typically go to an office regularly. Like, I don't need any help being alone. I'm often alone. But I find that I engage with my technology when I, like, definitely more than most, but it is situation dependent. You know, like, I know that when I'm with my family, since they are not on their devices, like, I'm less on them. And sometimes that is stressful because I just want to get shit done. And, like, even when you know how it is when you're in a room with people who are not working and you're working, they think that, like, just making an offhand comment to you is just one little thing, but, like, they disrupt your flow or whatever. Like, so, like, I've had that thing where I'm like, I just don't get as much done as when I'm alone. But, like, I think there's you just recognize the communities that you're part of, and everybody's going to have a different level. So when I'm with my high school friends, that's just not their jam. And I'm excited to be with them, so I'm talking to them and, you know, engaging with them, versus when I was at CES and I was, like, walking with them, some guys from Gizmodo, and we were all checking our phone, and I actually said, like, isn't it nice when you, like, when you're with people who all get that it's okay to walk and check your phone and not say anything, and it's not perceived as rude, it's just cool. I think part of it is, you know, taking the temperature of where you are and who you're with, and sort of indulging your own needs and just being aware of them. So you can say that I'm addicted, or you can say that I'm being rude when I'm checking my phone or, you know, fleeing to the bathroom, or you can say that, like, I'm the best judge of what I need to do right now, and, you know, and you're going to have faith that I am acting as, you know, taking in the totality of considerations for this specific event.
Yeah, I get it, and I certainly don't mean to be judgmental, and I would say that my, you know, if we're going to call it an addiction, my relationship with technology is the same, and I don't own an iPad, but I've certainly done fake bathroom breaks before to check my cell phone. So I'm not, you know, I'm feeling the same things. You know, in terms of best practices or solutions, I mean, I'll take a second and quickly talk about these little bags that you guys got on your chairs. A few years ago, I'm part of this group called Reboot, which is sort of a Jewish think tank, and a group of us sat down and had the discussion of just very high level, like, is there still room for a Sabbath in our modern lives? Just a day of rest. You know, it's part of many religions, and this has been around for, you know, forever, this idea of taking one day a week to kind of escape from work. And that's not just from a technological perspective, but just a day to catch our breath. You know, I remember growing up on Sundays when stores were closed, and all that's gone. I mean, we are in a full-on 24/7 world, and, you know, the group that, when we had this discussion, none of us necessarily wanted the kind of Sabbath that we knew from our youth. Like, we are not religious. We didn't really want to just go to synagogue on Friday nights or follow all the traditions. So we basically came up with these 10 simple principles that can be observed any day of the week, and they're guidelines. So the first tenet is avoid technology. It's not turn off your cell phone. It's just avoid technology. Some of the other principles in the manifesto include be with loved ones, get outside, find silence, give back.
Drink wine,
light candles.
In moderation.
And so, you know, and again, we really did the project for ourselves. I mean, because we all felt this sense of, like, yeah, it really would be nice to have one day a week where we could feel it was okay to kind of live our lives a little bit differently. I mean, we were all in this 24/7 world. And You know, for me on a personal level, a few times a year I succeed in unplugging from sunset on Friday night till sunset on Saturday night, but I still, you know, again, though the project has a lot of passion, I have a lot of passion for the project, it's still incredibly hard, and I don't unplug in an orthodox manner, but it certainly helped me, and, you know, growing a company, like, we've been able to kind of take some of these elements and bring them into our work office culture. So, you know, everybody that I work with knows that I'm not going to respond to an email on a Saturday, and they know that they're not expected to work on a Saturday, or that they can have a day of work off and not feel pressure about it. So, mm-hmm. It's been helpful.
Yeah. When I met my wife 7 years ago, she was much more religiously observant Jewish than I was, which was nothing. So it wasn't hard to be more. And so she really kept the Sabbath, like, from Friday night to Saturday night, like, nothing. No, like, total unplugging. And so it took us a while to find, like, we had our dialectical moments. So now, it's been, like, 3 years now. About 3.5 years. We unplug Friday night and I don't go back on. She doesn't really go back online at all for most of Saturday. I usually don't go until after breakfast. So I've been doing this for a couple of years now. After breakfast, I do. Like, I always find an excuse to, like, check the weather so that our girls have, like, the right clothes on, like, wherever we're going to the zoo, and then somehow I check my email by accident. And it's amazing, you know? Like, I'm a total convert. Like, I totally understand where they were coming from when they developed this, I don't know, a couple hundred years, thousands of years, like, whatever. And look, like, well, I still turn the lights on and off in our home. But we just disconnect from technology, and it's amazing, and it's a taste of, like, just old school. And it works really, really well for us. And it's probably, like, the only night of the week that I know that we're really going to, like, connect with each other, and we actually have, like, conversations. And it sounds so cheesy and cliche. I sound like a evangelical up here. But it's actually, that's how we do it. Like, that's it. And it works really well for my mental state.
So I think, you know, in our last few minutes remaining, we have a few learnings that I captured from this panel. You know, one, take off your shirt and phone when you get home. Only one person on the two line, you know, and really, you know, CC, if you're CC'd, you know, no response required, using FYI so people know they don't have to respond, the cell phone stack with the person who violates paying the bill, experiment with personal rules for yourself, unplugging is going to be the next punk rock, Radiohead is still very relevant, and consider a ritualistic day off, you know, whatever that means to you. I think in our last, you know, now minute and 30 seconds, if there's one question or a topic that you want people to respond to, and then we'll call it a day. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Is there, to create more efficiency around this, is there an app which seems sort of
is there an unplugging app?
Yeah, is there an unplugging app? So if people text me, I don't have to freak out and be like, oh my God, it's my cousin and I haven't heard from her in a month and she's going to think it's weird that I didn't get back to her.
There actually is an app that we released last year for the National Day of Unplugging. It reminds you every week to unplug, and it will actually tweet out or post to Facebook that you're unplugged during that time. So it'll announce to your friends, I've unplugged, and it lists your manifesto as to what those is, because the 10 points that we discussed are subjective, so you can edit your own versions. So the app, I think, is the Sabbath Manifesto. That's what it is.
Yeah, I think if you
search for it there's an iTunes and a Touch Web version, but
But I think we also only have the Jewish version right now. I don't think you can choose the day of the week that you sign up for yet.
No, you can't change the day.
But we will have, don't worry, if you're into
the variability of picking the day.
Search Sabbath Manifesto in the iPhone
iTunes
library.
Yeah. It's free.
But I've thought about this before. I love the idea of, like, an auto-return text message, right? So that you could turn that on and it just says, right, I'm... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the out of office. So I want to close by just saying that we have the there's actually the first ever unplugged party at South by Southwest is happening this evening. There's something on your chairs to tell you exactly where and when, but it starts at 5. And also you should come and help set a recordsetter.com world record for the most people to turn off their cell phones at once at South by Southwest, which will probably never happen again. I just want to thank all of you for waking up this morning and joining us and for being a great audience. And hopefully there are things here that now that you can, you know, turn on your devices again, you will help us share. Thanks so much.